Raven has not played the game.
So?
So, your opinion, which is a little bit negative at this point in time, is based off of other people's impressions and what they've told you.
Right. Like, my opinion, I think, really boils down to the fact that I know I don't have the time to play it now. So the more I keep telling myself it's going to suck, the easier it is for me to ignore it.
See, I argued that the way the game is set up and the structure and the fact that it is linear for the first, you know, so many hours it takes to get through there is perfect for you who say you don't have a lot of time, because there are plenty of save points that you can get to. You do not have to spend an hour or two wandering around a huge dungeon wondering where it is you have to go, which boss it is you have to kill. It is fairly laid out to you, for you, so that you can progress through the game at a nice pace. You can play for, you know, honestly, you could play for 45 minutes and get, you know, and jump a checkpoint and save and just be on your merry way and do whatever you need to do with your family, or, you know, go to work, come back, play for another 45 minutes. If you have a long stretch of time, you can clear out a couple of chapters. Like, the way the game is structured is perfect for people who do not have a lot of time to sit down in front of a game and, you know, explore every nook and cranny. And, you know, for me, it's great because I don't like open world games. I mean, we talked about Fallout 3 before, which is, you know, I think the game that a lot of people like to go to when they talk about Western RPGs is Fallout 3. You know what? I hated Fallout 3. As soon as I got out of the vault and was presented with this world, I just completely lost interest in stuff. So, like, my Fallout 3 experience was I got out of the vault, I got to the first town, I'm like, you know what, this is a pretty nice place. I think I'm just going to be a bum here for the rest of the game. And I stayed. The game had lost interest, and I had no interest in finding it again. And so, that was the end of my Fallout 3 experience. So, you know, the fact that it is a more directed experience in Final Fantasy is something that I really do enjoy. You know, and you know, Raymond, I think you and I we're both ex-D&D players. You probably still play on occasion.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, for me, like, D&D, I mean, it's a directed experience. You have a dungeon master telling you, you know, especially if he's running off of a module, I mean, it's a fairly linear directed experience. So, which I enjoyed. I enjoyed getting together with a friend, you know, a couple of friends on a few hours. And, like, Final Fantasy feels just like that kind of directed D&D experience. You know, the game is presenting me with a story. I'm moving through it. And I'm happy with it. I mean, the game looks fantastic.
Are you
fantastic.
Telling me that the... Well, okay, I can't argue that the game doesn't look fantastic. I've seen it. It does look amazing, but I've also heard even from you that the beginning's a little slow. And that's my biggest issue.
The game is a little slow, but the game is it's slow because it, you know, it jumps back and forth between different parties, and it gives you different characters to be in control of. The way that it kind of unfolds the story is, like I talked to you about this before, is like the story is not spoon fed to the player. You know, I saw some people talking about how they were disappointed that they had to go to the data logs to, you know, research some of the background of the story. I kind of like going to the data logs because, you know what, I picked up the main pieces of the story as we're going through, and the way it's explained, it's not like the character is monologuing to the player to explain what's going on. So it kind of works because people in this world are familiar with the background, so they talk about it in a way that's not where it's like where they're not explaining it like you're just, you know, brand new to the, you know, to the characters, not brand new to the world. So, like, when you get to the story, you're like, you know, I wonder how this happened. You go back and look at the dialog, and you could, you know, you fill in the gaps. But it's not a gap that, it's a gap that if you didn't want to know about it, you didn't have to.
It just sounds like too much work just to get into a game. I'm sorry.
Like, but what I'm saying is you don't have to go to the dialogs to get into the game. The story draws you into the game, and once you're into the game, if you want to fill in those gaps, the data logs are there for you.
What about all the talk of you're only pressing, you know, all you have is one attack for the first 2 hours of the game?
You can use the abilities command I don't know if that's something that people just kind of gloss over. If you wanted to use abilities instead of auto battle, you have that option. But okay. Though, huh? Did I use the abilities?
Yeah.
From time to time, if the battle called for it, because the targeting, the way the auto battle works is it just, I don't know how it decides which is the most, you know. Well, actually, there was an interview done with one of the designers talking about how the auto battle works. If you run up into enemy that's weak to lightning, if you wanted to, you could go to the abilities and select, you know, Thundara for like four times. But that's not going to be deal the most damage. If you go Thundara and then Spark Strike and Thundara and Spark Strike again, you'll actually do more damage. So the way that the auto battle works is if you've identified what your enemy is weak to, it will set up the commands to deal the most damage. But there are some fights where you want to go into the abilities and you want to pick what buffs you cast or what debuffs you cast and target a specific enemy to make sure that they're either debuffed or make sure that your party's buffed. And in that case, you don't really want to rely on the auto battle command. You want to, you know, make your own selections. So, like, the game, there is strategy to the combat. Is it quicker? Absolutely. You know, do you have to sit there and, like, you know, scroll through menus and find the exact one you want to do? No. It's much quicker, it's much easier, it's much lightweight, and for me, I really enjoy it. It's kind of a night, you know, in Final Fantasy XII, there's a lot of people complaining that if you set up your gambit just right, the game played itself.
And well, it did.
Right, it did. Final Fantasy XIII will never play itself, but it does make it much easier for, you know, you can, like last night I was grinding for 2 hours trying to power level my characters and get some materials, some components to upgrade my weapons. And like once I got into the groove, you know, I would like get into a combat and I would start off in Relentless Attack, which is one Commando and two Ravagers. So they're increasing the combo chain as quickly as possible to stagger an enemy, which then makes all hits critical. And then if I took too much damage, I would drop down into Solidarity, which is a Commando, Sentinel, and Medic. Which, you know, the Medic will heal my party. The Sentinel will take all the aggro, like a tank and, you know, an MMO. And then my Commando is just dealing damage. And then once everybody was healed up, I would switch back. I could switch into a different Paradigm that would buff my party and debuff the enemy if I needed to do that. And it wasn't something that I was having to really micromanage to the point of, you know, going through 12 different menus. It was just a simple hit of the L1, scroll down a couple, bam, there it is. I'm back into combat. It's quick. It's intuitive. And I really do enjoy it. But, you know, like I said, if you wanted to get into the, like, super micromanagement, you can actually go into options, turn down the speed of combat to slow, not use the auto battle command, and go through all that. I mean, if that's how you wanted to play the game, it's there for you.
Okay.
So, you know, and, you know, for me, honestly,
I'm going to try it eventually, but I mean,
the game looks fantastic. It's a cast of characters. It's the first cast of characters in a Final Fantasy game that I'm actually interested in. Like, their motivations seem real to me. It's not just, you know, we're trying to save the world. There's some internal conflict between people. You know, at the start of the game, some people hate each other. Some people don't trust each other. And, you know, throughout the course of the game, seeing those relationships change and develop and, you know, mature. And, you know, finding out, you know, what this group of people decides to do with their, you know, in the situation that they've been cast into. Which is, you know, the way they're cast into it, it's almost unfair. You know, and it's just really, I think, you know, for me, the story is really interesting, much more interesting than Final Fantasies in the past. And, you know, it's probably the first Final Fantasy since, you know, the Super Nintendo days that I'm actually going to see through to the end.
Well, I guess that's saying something.
Yeah, that's some high praise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, you didn't see 10 through to the end?
No.
Really?
I didn't care that. I mean, at some point in 10, I just stopped kind of caring about things, you know? It was like, I didn't particularly find Titus to be a, you know, an intriguing character. You know,
I'm confused. I loved 10, so.
I'm not saying that I didn't enjoy 10. It's just at some point I just stopped caring about the world. And, you know, at that point I just, you know, I stopped playing it. I mean, I got pretty far into it, I believe. I think they were on their way to return to Xanarkand or whatever.
Okay.
But.
Sure. On a totally unrelated subject, can you tell me why it costs $76 to ship a book?
Is it a heavy book?
It's Art of Uncharted 2, the limited folio edition. It's a $300 book to begin with. Why should I pay $76 to ship it?
If it's super first class, so it doesn't get bent or hurt in any way?
I hope so. I mean, personally, I'm hoping that Nolan North delivers it to my door and talks to me as Drake for a while. At that price,
you wouldn't want one of the female voice actresses to deliver it and like do something else for you.
Fine, if Claudia Black shows up, I'd be happy to.
Right.
Yeah, I'll take that.
But okay,
I guess I'm not getting this book after all, not at that shipping.
Yeah, that's pretty outrageous. You should just go pick it up at the Amazon warehouse.
Yeah, there you go.
So tell me more about some Resonance of Fate. Isn't that what you guys were talking about as well?
Sort of, except for Jason doesn't have it, and I haven't started playing it at all, so that would be tough. But next time, I'm going to play it this Thursday. I think. So I say.
Yeah.
And so now it's impossible to find?
Well, it's a Tri-Ace game released by Sega, and you see how good they've been about, you know, actually shipping a lot of their games. Look at Valkyria Chronicles.
Right.
So I'm just worried that, you know, it's going to turn out to actually be good, and then all of a sudden people aren't going to be able to find it, and it will probably suck for those people. But I've played enough games in the last few weeks anyways. God.
Well, what have you been playing?
Well, let's see. I completed Dante's Inferno, completed Bad Company 2, and then went back and played Bad Company for the first time. I'm like, this is fun. Almost done with Ratchet and Clank. And now I'm playing God of War 3.
All right, so how is God of War 3 right now? I know before, you know, last time I think we recorded, you were saying Dante's Inferno to you was better than the God of War games. How does that compare right now to God of War 3? Does it still hold up?
In terms of pure quality, you know, in terms of graphic and how it plays, God of War 3 is definitely the better game. I mean, it looks amazing. When it's not trying to be a platformer, it plays better. Because when it tries to be a platformer, the jumping mechanics suck in that game. I can't count the number of times I've died because Kratos' wings don't come out and I plummet to my death. And I'm just like, okay. But then I forget about it as soon as I'm eviscerating, you know, something shortly thereafter. So it's not a big deal. But overall game-wise, right now still I prefer Dante's.
Really?
I don't see myself playing God of War 4 times the way I've played through Dante's 4 times now, from start to finish. And I'm planning another run soon. It's just fun.
Must be.
I mean, I know it's basically the same game. I get that. And I know that God of War 3 now looks better. But, and I'm not one of those people that says God of War 3 sucks because Kratos is an asshole. I don't care. I get it. He's an ass. I've not understood that in reviews at all. Mm-hmm. Or everyone just keeps harping on the fact. Yeah.
Like, I must have missed something in the first two games when, like, Kratos was actually a nice, caring person.
Well, he saved his family. Oh, no, he killed his family. No, he's never been a good guy.
The only time I found Kratos a likable character is when he was banging two chicks. I was like, yeah, way to go, Kratos!
Yeah, it's because you were hoping you were Kratos at that one point.
Yeah. Like, that's the only time I want to be Kratos. Like, the whole killing my family? No, I don't want to do that. The whole being mad at the gods, no, best on me. Just be Kratos in that one minigame.
So speaking of, are there sex minigames in this third one? I think there'd have to be, right?
From what I've heard, apparently there is, and they said it serves a purpose. I'm not far enough.
It serves a boss battle?
You know, I don't know, because that would be awesome. But I remember them saying
that.
That's
how you kill Medusa or something, that'd be great.
You have sex with her?
It's like that. It'd be like that scene in Dante's Inferno, where like you know what I'm talking
Cleopatra?
About, right?
Yep. Yeah. Cleopatra. Yes.
Scott, there's this scene in Dante's Inferno where you just killed one boss, and Cleopatra. What's the name of her lover? I forgot his name.
Mark Antony.
Mark Antony. Yeah. You just killed Mark
Antony. Not Anthony.
Anthony. All right.
Antony.
Whatever. That crazy that name that Raymond's saying, it sounds like Anthony, but it's got some type of weird pronunciation at some point. That name right there.
Sure.
Just kill this dude, right? And then Cleopatra comes after you because she's pissed. And like the entire time, like doing this, the camera shifts. And it looks like you're doing something to Cleopatra that you're really not. And it totally looks like, because she's coming after you, like, you know, she wants a piece of you in like the biblical sense, and you kind of wrestle around a bit, and then you actually end up killing her. But when you kill her, it looks like you're, you know,
it looks like he just thrust down to deep business. Inside her.
Yeah.
And she even has the look on her face like you just did, and then it pulls back to show, oh wait, that's not what you thought it was. Okay.
Oh really?
Yeah, I was like, wow, this game is getting even more interesting. I think that's why I keep replaying it, just to watch that scene over and over again. Yeah, it's got to be it. But I guess we'll see about the God of War sex scene. I know I'm not very far. I made the idiot mistake when I first started playing it and tried to play it on its Titan level difficulty to start with.
Oh, nice.
I have never felt more like Jason's skill level of a gamer than that time. What? Well, playing on Titan mode, I just felt like I didn't know how to play video games. So I felt like you.
You set it to like the easiest or just above the easiest difficulty setting, and you just enjoy yourself. That's how I play games.
Sometimes I enjoy playing games on their most difficult settings. It feels like more of a challenge, especially if the easy settings are just too easy.
You know, if I wanted a challenge, I would lose weight and learn how to fucking rock climb. All right? I just want to sit down and play a goddamn video game and enjoy myself. I don't need to, you know, have to challenge myself or prove how big my, you know, dick is by having a trophy that says, you played the game on hell setting. Fuck you. You play the game on hell setting, you have nothing better to do.
I don't really care about the trophy aspect of it. Sometimes, really, I mean, especially in Batman Arkham Asylum's case, I felt like I got more out of the game by playing through it on hard than if I had played on any other setting. It just felt that much more satisfying when I finished. I didn't care that I got multiple trophies when it ended. It just felt more satisfying. And I feel, yeah, the game was still fun. But sometimes they make them too hard, and then you're right. You're only doing it because you want that trophy. I know plenty of people that do that. Hell, I know someone that's working on his platinum for Final Fantasy 13 right now.
Wow.
That's crazy.
I took a look at it last night, and it's not really that crazy. I've had lots of friends that have played through Final Fantasies that would have done, if there had been trophies, they would have gotten the trophy in it for doing everything. you know, like the I was like the trophies, like the probably the thing that's gonna take the longest is just maxing out all of your characters, which, you know, I'm already kind of, you know, trying to do. So,
right,
you know, I mean, I had a friend that took every character, like in Final Fantasy X, he took every character through all the way through the grid, spear grid.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I did that too, so I guess, I don't know. I mean, so, I think that's part of the reason why I'm still staying away from 13 is because...
It will consume you. Though,
yeah, exactly. And I have a time already picked out for that. And this summer, I know at some point, the wife will take both girls, disappear to the in-laws' lake cabin for a week, and leave me and just two dogs. You're dang right. I'm just going to, you know, camp out and play Final Fantasy 13. I'll give it a good, you know, 15 hours straight before I make a final opinion. But as of now, the game sucks.
Having not touched it.
Yep, having not touched it. I still have a shelf full of games that I haven't touched. Not even counting that. I actually sold my copy of 13, so...
So you bought it and then sold it?
Yeah, I sold it to a friend, though. So at least it's being played. No, I sold it to him for what I get as a discount from work. Oh, okay. So it saved him money, and I actually turned store credit into cash, which is a rare thing to be able to do.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think you just found a business endeavor here.
I've thought about it in the past, but I'm like, somehow they'd probably catch on and fire me eventually.
Right. Well, yeah, when you're buying every single game and multiple copies of the same game.
Right. Well, I did just buy my second copy of Bad Company 2.
Why'd you buy a second copy?
I traded in the first one to get the very first Bad Company. I'm like, oh, I'll pay for it because the other one's so old. And then I was sitting here this morning, I'm like, God, I really want to play Bad Company 2 again. Guess I'm going to go buy it.
I got talking about abusing trade-ins and stuff like that, I got a funny story because, you know, when I worked at Activision, we could get Activision titles for, like, I don't know, it was like $5 or $10. I forgot the exact price, even like new releases. So this guy that was working there bought... I don't know how many copies, but he bought enough copies. Then he went down to Best Buy and said that he got these as a gift.
No way.
And he returned them for store credit. He had purchased enough games through the company store to go to Best Buy and return them all to buy a brand new, like, HD TV.
Nice.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, subsequently after that, like, the Best Buys around Activision says no more Activision trade-ins.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. How come you never bought me a bunch of copies so I could cheat that?
Because when I was working there, we didn't have a lot of good stuff that you wanted. Like, you That's got my true. Copy of Doom 3. You got my copy of Doom 3.
Yeah. That is true, and that was pretty shitty.
Yeah, that game was not good.
No, not in the slightest.
I was looking forward to it so much.
You think it was not good for you? You try spending, you know, a month of 14-hour days playing through the game.
Is that what you had to do? Is that what you did at Activision? Were you sort of product control, kind of?
I was a QA tester, and actually what we did is we were on swing shift. So we were localization testers.
Oh, okay.
So my experience with Doom 3 was playing through the game and then sitting and looking at every one of those little, like, screens that you could stop and look at.
Yeah.
That had information, just like background information, and making sure that all the lines of text weren't truncated or didn't bleed off of the, you know, off of the screen.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like 45-page checklist. Because there were a lot of screens in those levels.
That's... God, no wonder you hated that job.
I'm surprised you still like video games. I mean, to me, that would just take away all, like, the magic.
You know what, though? Like, honestly, like, I love that job.
Really?
I mean, like, it was one of those things where it's like, I hear people complain about being a QA tester all the time. Like, there's been a lot of jokes made about that show on PlayStation Network called The Tester, about how horrible the jobs you get.
Yeah.
I'm like...
I love the Penny Arcade.
You still play games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, playing a video game, like, up to that point in my life, I had some really shitty jobs. I mean, that job is a hell of a lot better than the fast food restaurants I worked at when I was like 16, 17, and 18. That job is a hell of a lot better than, you know, the casino I worked at prior to that job. I mean, you went in at 5:30, you sat down in, you know, in a cool dark area and played games for, you know, 8 hours.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't go wrong with that job. No matter how kind of monotonous it gets at times, you're still playing game. You're still being paid to play a game. Like, so you can only complain about that so much before I come over and I punch you in the face.
So you're saying you had fun with true crime?
Yeah, I did have fun. I told you, the best part of true crime for the PC was the fact that they had a multiplayer component. And in that game, you can unlock Snoop Dogg as a playable character. And he had his own ride that had hydraulics. Now, it's something they took out of the single-player game, but in the multiplayer game, they had different like power-up moves that you can do in your car to like give you speed boosts or quick 180-degree turns. Like, for whatever reason, they took it out of the single-player game, but it was still in the multiplayer. So if you got into Snoop Dogg's car and you jacked up his hydraulics so that the front end was like angled upwards and then hit forward like four times quickly to do like a speed boost, the physics of the game would go, okay, well, you got a car at an incline and you're going really fast, so it would actually, the car would take off and fly across the map. And then, because multiplayer was also kind of messed up, like the physics were messed up, we would go down to, like, down in Santa Monica in the game, and there'd be like a long stretch of road along the beach, and we'd both get into buses, and we would do the speed boost toward each other. And because the physics just weren't working properly, as soon as you contacted each other, like the crash would send you both flying to opposite parts of Los Angeles. You would just fly like really quickly. It was great. And like, no, I mean, like, you had fun doing that stuff. I mean, I worked on, you know, True Crime, Streets of LA, a game called Empire, which I'm sure nobody heard of, Call of Duty United Offensive, Doom 3, and something else.
Doom 3. The game with the flashlight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So were you ever able to just kind of play the games, I don't know, kind of for fun, but while working? I mean, or was it that kind of stuff where, like you were just saying, where you had to look at every single screen? I mean, were they ever just like, okay, we'll just play the game and let us know if, like, anything breaks?
Yeah, if the developers didn't bring a new build down and we'd already tested it, we just had to, you know, just go ahead and play the game, play multiplayer. We did that a lot for Doom. We did that a lot for United Offensive, where, you know, especially United Offensive, where we had, like, stress test the game.
Mm-hmm.
Internally, so I mean, yeah, there was plenty of times where we just kind of sat around for hours and just, you know, screwed around and played, you know, just kind of like, you know, when I was playing Doom 3, like when we just had like, you know, free time, I would like see how far through the level I could be without actually touching the ground, so I would like jump from railing to railing.
Nice,
you know, and United Offensive, I would like try to find different objects of the game that I could jump onto and like get above the, you know, above the level. I mean, I, you know, that was just stuff that I did, like, in my free time. Like I said, even though, you know, it's kind of a monotonous, you know, thankless job, it was still, you're still playing video games. Like, you can only complain about that so much when you look at some of the other jobs that you have the option to get.
Yeah, like working at GameStop.
Yeah. That job right there. I don't know if I can keep that job.
You know, honestly, when you have to deal with all the idiot customers who barely know the difference between a Nintendo 64 and a PS3, it's not fun most days. And they don't ever believe you when you say you don't have something. It's like, no, I'm lying to you. I just don't want to sell to you, apparently. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I hate customers. I love my job. I just hate the people. That make any sense?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, what would you say the percentages of your workday, Raymond, that you're just dealing with people who don't know anything about games, like parents or just people who don't know anything?
Probably 60%, because we are a mall store.
Oh, well, yeah, that'll do it.
I mean, because we're in a mall and not like a strip where the people are coming in, usually are coming in for a purpose, you just have parents who are randomly walking by and think, oh, my kid likes this stuff. I'll just go in. And it's like, you don't even know what kind of games your kid likes, so how can I help you pick one out?
Right.
It's like, do you have a PS3 or a 360?
Kids drop off.
Oh, yeah, we're a freaking babysitting service.
Yeah.
If our demo units are turned on, kids are just left there. It's like, oh, I hate you all. And then you have parents will come in occasionally. Have you seen, you know, my child? I'll be like, no, but that's not – I mean, I'm sorry. I see a lot of kids. Well, weren't you looking? I'm like, that's not my job.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk to mall security? That's more their job than mine.
Yeah. So like 60% are people that have no knowledge whatsoever, and then the other 40% are the people that hang out in GameStop constantly and try to be your friends.
Right, and think they have too much knowledge.
Right.
Oh, I love them, guys. I love them.
Well, actually, I'd say of that 40%, 20% of those, the other 20 are the ones that come in and don't want to be your friend and constantly tell you how everyone on the internet says GameStop is evil and that they don't shop there, yet they're in, you know, my store. And then they'll buy things.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Like, I just had to come see for myself. And yes, you're evil. Now give me two copies of that.
Right. Give me a copy of Modern Warfare 2. Right. And you say I'm evil and you're supporting Activision. Good call there, buddy. All right. Activision, I really do. They make it so easy for me to say I'm not buying their games anymore.
Well, yeah. How about a couple weeks ago? We haven't recorded since it happened, but the whole removal of people from was it Infinity Ward?
Yeah.
Yep.
For not wanting to go along with Activision's plans.
I say more power to Infinity Ward.
I just want to say that I don't know if I voiced this opinion, but I'd. After I finished Modern Warfare 2, I had some serious concerns about what was going to happen with Infinity Ward because I sat there and I saw the ending of Modern Warfare 2. I'm like, this isn't really an ending. This is like a to be continued.
Right.
My question at that point in time was, who was going to continue the story? Because was Activision going to wait for Infinity Ward for another 2 years to finish it, or was Activision finally going to say, look, you know what, Treyarch? Why don't you go ahead and take, you know, Modern Warfare 2.5 and finish up the story for Infinity Ward?
Well, yeah, and it looks like, is Treyarch getting that, or is it Storm Rage that's now getting it?
I have no idea. I told you before, you just wait. You know who's going to get StarCraft 2? You know who's going to finish up StarCraft 2?
Yeah, I know. You're not even remotely funny, okay? Yeah, you know who's going to get the next World of Warcraft expansion then?
Neversoft.
Yes, there you go. And it's going to combine the Tony Hawk Ride controller and the Guitar Hero controller, so you have to use those in order to play.
Did anyone ever play Tony Hawk Ride?
No.
Raymond, I would think you were the most likely, maybe just an in-store demo kind of thing, but no, nothing?
No, we never actually had one working in the store. We broke our demo board, like, pretty early on. We wanted to see how much punishment it could take.
Like a real skateboard.
You're right, and trust me, when you throw it down an escalator, it doesn't do very well. I did that.
You know, I think Ride was ill-conceived from the very beginning, and, you know, I just don't see why they went that direction. I don't know if Activision looked at Skate and says, well, we can't do that, so let's go do Top Skater, the home edition, and make it suck. Or, you know, I don't know. Activision has made such bad decisions over the last, couple of years, that the only thing that keeps them really afloat is the fact that, you know, a lot of people are really, like, I don't want to insult people as much as I usually do, but Modern Warfare 2 is not really that great. Okay.
No, it's not.
But a lot of people, a lot of probably teenage boys who shouldn't, you know, be allowed to make decisions are playing it. Along with a bunch of drunk frat boys and, you know, whatnot. And that, you know, keeps sales going strong for them. And then, you know, and Activision's right on the coattails of Blizzard right now with their $10 billion they make every year.
Right. I mean, Activision can well, I don't know. Can Activision really afford to keep doing what they're doing? Is Blizzard enough to keep them afloat?
No. Is, you know, the question I have is, you know, how much of the Infinity Ward team is going to stay with Activision now that, you know, two of their, you know, heads have been, cut off?
I guess it would depend on where those heads go, right?
Right. You know, are they going to go back to EA? I guess that's likely. You know,
or maybe start a whole new company and sign exclusively with Sony. that's just me dreaming again.
You don't want to dream because honestly, Infinity Ward hasn't done. I mean, I don't know how much of Modern Warfare 2 was Activision's influence on Infinity Ward, but if Modern Warfare 2 was the best that Infinity Ward could put out, then they're not that good.
No.
You know, that single-player story was horrible. The multiplayer, you know, you and I have talked so long about the failings of the multiplayer in Modern Warfare 2, how the clan system is broken, how the maps were too small, how the gameplay was, you know, it was just a big mess, you know. So if that's the best that Infinity Ward can do, I don't necessarily want to see them put out another Modern Warfare. You know,
well,
so
I'd like to see him do something fully new without the restrictions of it being a Call of Duty game.
Yeah. I mean, that would be kind of interesting to see, but, you know, and I would like to see them stick it to Activision and, like, take the Call of Duty or the Modern Warfare name with them and go, ha ha.
Right, because the Modern Warfare is theirs. Call of Duty obviously isn't, but Modern Warfare is.
Right.
And I think, if I remember correctly, their contract with Activision states that no one can make a Call of Duty game more current than the Vietnam era, except for Infinity Ward.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so it could be really interesting to see what happens here.
Hmm. Can they do an alternate timeline, though, and get around it that way?
Potentially?
Feel like in the alternate time, in the alternate timeline, Vietnam doesn't happen until the year 2460.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean,
that's not what I said to do. Sorry, Amazon and me are not getting along.
Yeah. No, I mean, oh no, Scott, what do you think about the whole Activision thing? Like, you know.
Well, I mean, I don't really play the Call of Duty games or anything like that, so it doesn't really impact me too much, I guess. You know, I don't spend too much time thinking about it. I mean, I think they are a bit heartless by just their, I don't know, just their normal ways of operating, you know, just kind of pumping out sequels. And I think that, aren't they on record of saying, you know, they're not going to start, make a game that they can't sequelize, basically.
Yeah, you know, they like milk into the ground or something.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of a shame. And I'm disappointed that they own Blizzard, because I mean, I just hold Blizzard in such high esteem. And really, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, Blizzard seems that they can just kind of do whatever they want. I mean, it's not like Activision logos appear on any of their games anyway, you know. I mean, they're sort of autonomous, I think.
I'm telling you, don't say that too loudly, because I think Activision is now just kind of like, you know what? Fuck it. We don't need Blizzard. We'll make our own World of Warcraft game. How hard is it? Let's get them boys in from Raven. They did that Ultimate Alliance thing. Let's get them in here and get them doing something.
Like, no, they want to do that. They want the Call of Duty MMO.
I'm telling you.
Right?
That would be crazy.
At this point in time, at this point in time, Activision is so fucking full of themselves. Like, there's no telling what they're going to do.
Right.
You know, like, prior to this happening, did anybody here think that Activision would kind of go after Infinity Ward, one of the producers of their, you know, one of the largest grossing titles? Did anybody think this was going to happen?
Well, yeah, I guess if they try to step out of line, you know, I they're just sort of establishing that they're in charge, I guess. It is surprising, though. But, I mean, I don't blame, you know, the guys at Infinity Ward for wanting to do something different. I mean, just like how Bungie is, you know, sort of separated from Microsoft now, so they don't have to keep making Halo games.
But they're still making Halo games.
Right, isn't that weird how that works?
Yeah. I'm like, hello, guys. You guys should be done with Halo by now, right?
Right.
You know, but you're still, like, goes to my argument that Bungie can't make anything that doesn't suck. Did I say that? I'm sorry.
Really? You didn't?
I'm sorry, Halo fan. Oh, it's Donkey Dick.
Hey, Marathon was good.
Like, what, 30 years ago?
30 years ago. No, I don't think it was exactly 30 years ago.
So was there never a time where you enjoyed Halo? I mean, you didn't play Halo 1 or Halo 2 and enjoy it, either of you?
I played Halo 1.
I enjoyed it for, you know, I think I enjoyed it for the playthrough. I was never a big fan of the multiplayer.
Really?
And yeah.
That was the best part.
But my real problem with Halo began with Halo 2, when you briefly glimpsed Earth, and then we're immediately back on a Halo, and I was just like, not want to be here again. You know, right. The game does not do anything for me. The character doesn't do anything for me. The story doesn't do anything for me. Why would I play this?
Because you're crazy?
There you go.
I'd play it because I'm crazy, or I'm crazy because it doesn't do anything for me.
Oh, no, you'd play it because you're crazy.
Oh, okay.
I get the story not doing anything for you because, well, I mean, frankly, it sucks.
Right.
Yeah. The only Halo game that I had any hopes for, and you know, I said I bought OSDT buying into the fact that Bungie had finally decided to make a group of characters that I cared about, that were interesting, that actually talked and had some interaction, and then ODST is like, oh, yeah, by the way, you're alone and you're lost and you can't communicate with anybody and you don't even have Cortana to talk to. Have fun. You know? And now I can see, like, Bungie's trying to do it to me again with Halo Reach, saying, like, oh, you're going to have a team this time, and you're going to talk to people. And I'm like, I'm not buying it, Bungie, because, like, at some point, you're going to fuck me over again, and I'm going to be all by myself.
Yeah, probably.
You're so negative, sir.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Raymond, you're not.
No, not at all. I'm perfectly smiley, happy, and I love everything. Remember, ball of hate.
I have reneged on my Xbox 360 hate. Like I said, I would like to reacquire one at some point in the future because I want to play through a couple of games.
Yeah, well, what makes you
my impression? Because I've decided that I don't hate the system. I hate the society around the system.
I hate the culture around the community.
Yes, I hate the community because the community likes to believe that Xbox Live is the best thing in the world and that the Xbox 360 can't do any wrong and that the PlayStation 3 is, you know, there's just like this, I don't like, you know, like that little like group of hardcore Xbox 360 supporters and that's kind of what turned me off of the system. That and, like I said, the problem I had with my 360 being red-ringed and not having one for 3.5 months and then finally getting back something that, you know, was somebody else's broken system that they had fixed and sent back to me, you know, and for the 3.5 months that I was without a system, I got no type of reimbursement. Like, not even, like, you know, I think I got, like, a $5 Xbox Live card. Like, ooh, I could buy a theme. Thanks, Microsoft. You know. But I'm trying to tone down the hate a little bit, but, you know, for me, the one thing I can't say is that I still can't say that Halo, I think, is a good series. You know, like, I understand that technically the game plays fine. Okay, my argument's not with the way the game plays. The game plays fine. My argument is that I don't think that there's a story there. I think that Master Chief is a very bland, emotionless character, which he's designed to be. But I want something, you know, I don't want like a, you know, a Duke Nukem style character. I mean, I don't want something that over the top, but I want something that has a little bit more color, that is something that has a little bit more emotion.
Right.
And you know, Halo just does not do that. And it's fine. I mean, I understand that there's people that love that series because there is little story. And it's just like, you know, give me a gun, let me go shoot some shit. You know, great. Have fun doing that.
Yeah, that's not even a good give me a gun, go shoot some shit stuff. That's what Bad Company has become for me. You could take that cast of characters, put them in any game, I don't care, and I'll buy it just because they're fun.
Right.
And I get to shoot things. Even though apparently some people don't like the characters in that game. I'm looking your way, Jason. Not you particularly, but apparently you live with someone who can't stand them.
Yeah, yeah. My girlfriend hates the characters of Bad Company.
Why is that?
Because they sound like rednecks.
They are rednecks.
Yeah, they are rednecks. Yeah, she does not. I've had the original Bad Company. I would try playing the single player, and she's like, "Why are you playing that game? You know I hate it." And so I was like, "I guess I'm turning it off then." So, you know. Yeah, I mean. Yeah, but no, I mean, I want to get I'd like to get a 360 again because, like I said, I want to play Crackdown 2. I want to play Mass Effect 2. I want to play the new Splinter Cell because, like, you know, that's a game where I think that they're going in the right direction, where they're taking a character who I did not have a whole lot of interest before. I did not care for the broody, silent Sam Fisher who is just out, you know, kicking ass and taking names for his country. I kind of like this new Sam Fisher that's a little bit angry, a little bit darker, a little bit edgier, and not really having a clear, you know, plan as to what to do. I like that angle they're taking with him.
Right.
You know.
But it's Ubisoft. Don't you expect them to fully release it for the PS3, like, 6 months down the road?
Okay, fine. Possibly they do release it 6 months down the road, but that doesn't mean I want to wait 6 months. I kind of want to play it. I still think there's serious flaws with Xbox Live. I still can't believe that they're charging, you know, a monthly service and everything else that they charge on there. I mean, when you get nickel and dime for everything else you want to do on the service, they still charge you a monthly fee. I don't understand that. You know.
What?
But, you know, I would like to have the system just because there are games that I'm going to want to play. There is an occasional Xbox Live exclusive, like Shadow Complex, that I had a little bit of enjoyment with that I wouldn't mind going back and checking out. You know, Trials HD was something I enjoyed that's not on the PlayStation Network right now. You know, like, there are reasons to own the system. Maybe not, you know, the same reasons that you have for owning a PS3, like with their exclusives, like with their first party exclusives like Ratchet and Clank. And we still don't know what's going on with that, with, you know, supposedly now with why can't I remember their name?
Insomniac.
Insomniac, yes. I was going to say Infamous, but that's a game.
Like, yes.
We still don't know what's going on with Insomniac going, you know, like, have we learned anything more about that? Are they going to be developing for the 360?
No, they're not.
So what was the story about that?
It was, IGN, which, you know, anything they say you should take with a grain of salt, reporting something they'd overheard at the GDC showroom floor.
Uh-huh.
It could have been two 360 people saying, look, wouldn't it be nice if Insomniac was coming? I mean, who knows, but Insomniac is, they've never publicly addressed when these rumors come up, but God, here I go again. They do post on NeoGAF, and they responded to this one again, saying, 2 months ago we said no, nothing's changed since then. So, I don't believe it. I don't believe anything IGN says, except for that they fire all their staff, apparently.
Right.
Yeah, how about that? Does it, you know, I keep trying to figure out who actually got fired. Is there any actual list of who's been let go from IGN?
Not that I've seen. But IGN seems to hide everything so well.
Right. Like, I'm kind of looking for something like when that happened at 1UP, you know, how they had a list of everyone who lost their jobs. Because I'm just curious, like, who's gone and who's not.
Right.
You know, that's kind of something that I wanted to talk about because, you know, I'm not sure who I talked to about this, but it was probably Raymond because that's who he's to talk to. It seems like over the last year and a half, 2 years, we've lost some of the best voices and best personalities in the video game journalism side of things, you know.
Right.
With, you know, back in the day with Luke going to Bungie and, you know, now David, you know, I was never a huge fan of David Ellis, but he did have a pretty good, you know, personality. Like him going to a Microsoft studio, Shane Bedenhausen going into Ignition Software, you know.
Oh, I didn't realize David Ellis had left, really? When did he leave 1UP?
Last week, he was going to 343 Studios to work on Halo Reach.
Wow, weird. I did not know that.
Yeah. You know, with the firings of, you know, IGN, with the mass layoffs of 1UP over a year ago, you know, where is that next great voice for video games going to come from? Like, what's going to be the next great podcast that steps up from that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, EGM is relaunching, what, like this month or next month, right?
Yeah, pretty soon.
So, I mean, how's that going to fare? I Twittered this last week that I thought about subscribing to GamePro because I want to see what kind of impact John Davison has had over there because he was always one of my favorite voices at the 1UP network, you know. And, you know, and the other question I had for, you know, for us is because we've lost those, you know, those great voices and those great writers, like, I find that I'm less likely to read reviews because, like, I just, the people who I'm reading reviews, they're not people whose names I recognize,
mm-hmm.
you know. So where do we go from here? Like, where does the next great, you know, group of writers, the next great group of voices that influence a generation of gamers, where do they come from?
Well, I guess, you know, I guess from us, you know, the up and coming people. I mean, yeah. You know, those great voices weren't, you know, always great. They had to get there. So,
right.
It's kind of cool. Yeah. Maybe we're kind of in a transition period where, yeah, like the originals who've been there, you know, since the 90s and stuff like that are kind of moving on. And now it's, hopefully a new batch of, interesting voices, but I mean, yeah, you never really know, but I agree. I mean, even looking at 1UP, I mean, I don't really recognize any of the names on reviews anymore, and it's hard to want to trust or invest much in the opinions of those you don't really know.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, and it's, you know, even, you know, like Jeff Green leaving, you know, to go to EA, it's just like, so many people who I thought were really good writers and had a really good voice and a really good opinion about games. And, you know, like, I don't know. It just seems like it's very much open time for, you know, reviewers. And one of the questions I posted is like, are video game reviews even necessary anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I've, my opinion on games has varied greatly from reviews I've seen. Like, I mean, you know, I'm loving Final Fantasy where... Did we lose somebody?
No, we're okay. I mean, Ray went to go answer a call from his wife, but...
Right. Okay, I just thought I heard something on Skype hang up, and so I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, no, it looks okay.
Yeah. You know, like... you know, we talked about how people on Twitter, which is, you know, something I think that it, you know... I'm seeing more and more and more people's opinions coming through in these small 140, you know, character bytes of Twitter than I am seeing of actual reviews. And, you know, one of the things that I'm you know, we talked about that we see a lot is people talking about how Kratos is a dick. You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, this is new?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is, I mean, do we need reviewers to pad their reviews to like a 1,000-page, 1,000-word review? Or, you know, like I said on Facebook, do we just need like, you know, the 10 things you should know about this game?
Right.
And completely remove any type of biased opinion of the game and just say, look, you know, like with Final Fantasy, it's like, yes, the game starts off slow. You know, the game is gorgeous. The characters are interesting. Or the character design is interesting. Like, you know, at what point do we need, you know, like these long-winded, adjective-filled reviews, you know, that's just, you know, that just kind of goes to, you know, to fill up a word count.
Right. Well, it is true. I mean, how we consume information is changing right now. I mean, especially at least online. I mean, it is very much a quick, you know, blurb is what we're more interested in. And that, I think that's why people, and this isn't new. I mean, this has been going on for years now, but, you know, just skip to the end and see the score and maybe see the closing paragraph, you know, where it's all summed up. And, you know, it does kind of, you know, it does kind of make you think, are we just writing all those words because, you know, as a games journalist, like that's what we feel we need to do, rather than, you know, actually doing it because it needs to be done, you know.
Right. You know, and, you know, there's always been talk in the industry about, you know, trying to get that one great reviewer that defines video game reviews. God, what's the name of the writer for Rolling Stone that everybody always tried to?
I don't know. I bet if Ray was here, he would know.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're just trying to find out that one voice. Dropped. What?
What? Huh?
I was just reading your messages to me, sir.
Well, yeah. Well, I wasn't in the call. Apparently, you guys don't like me anymore. I get it, but okay.
Well, you weren't in the call, really?
Yeah.
Never left our mind. The only thing it said was that it hung up the private call you had with me.
No, it
got called. It.
I was no longer in the other one either, so who knows?
Hmm.
That's what I get for answering my cell phone.
Yeah.
I won't do that anymore.
It's just the wife. What could she possibly, you know, want?
Right. Instead, I'll just continue to play with Amazon where I just pre-ordered Armageddon on Blu-ray.
Wow.
Is it the Criterion Edition?
I don't know. I didn't care. I just saw Armageddon and Tombstone for one price together, and I'm like, yep, done.
hold on. What's the price?
Hang on. I'm getting there. What happened to my browser?
Because that's now a fantastic. Broken. That's a fantastic, you know, couple of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, if you've not watched Armageddon, the Criterion Edition with like the commentaries, you need to.
Why?
Well, you know how most commentaries is like the director and then like the, you know, the director of cinematography and like somebody else you don't care about, unless you're like really into movies. Armageddon come like on the Criterion Edition came with two commentaries. One was Michael Bay, Bruce Willis, Ben Affleck, I think Billy Bob or somebody else, which was really funny because throughout the course of the commentary, and Ben Affleck likes to do impersonations of Billy Bob from Sling Blade. So like during like, you know, during different moments, sometimes like the action on the scene is like supposed to be really dramatic and you have, you know, Ben Affleck, you know, talking about, you know, like Billy Bob voice, and it's fantastic. And then the other soundtrack is like some of the smartest people in the world from NASA, like looking at the thing and telling us why this would never work.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, well, you know, we have some ideas on how to, you know, avoid an asteroid, but they're really, you know, kind of out there. And like one of the ideas they talk about is that they have this idea to. If they were to detect an asteroid early enough, what they would do is they would send a rocket up there with a small robot that would have an arm. that would throw pebbles into space, right? The small pebbles into space.
Okay.
And the purpose of throwing these small pebbles into space is, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So their theory is that this small robot throwing pebbles off into space, every time I throw a pebble off into space, the asteroid would move ever so slightly in the opposite direction. So if they were to launch this into space early enough, like it would shift the asteroid just off enough of a track to avoid the Earth. And it's such a ludicrous idea that it's like, we just have this small robot. We'd land on this giant asteroid that's going to kill Earth. Just have them throw pebbles into space and we'd be saved.
Sure.
You know, it was such a fantastic, you know, it's definitely worth taking a break in video games to watch that.
I haven't had any issues, but I've been hearing about the issues, and yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, basically, to play the game, you have to log into your EA, your EA account online, and if you lose your connection at any point while you're playing, you'll be booted from the game. So, I mean, you don't even have to be online just to connect. I mean, you know, to verify, you have to be online, constantly throughout your entire gameplay, you know, experience. So. It's kind of a weird decision, I think.
You know, a lot of games have been like that lately, though. I mean, like Dante's Inferno from EA was kind of the same way, where, you know, it signed you in, not to your EA account, but, you know, it had to be online for you to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think didn't the Xbox have a problem with Bad Company 2, where because it's also always on. And they had a problem with their servers, and nobody could play multiplayer or single player.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. That sucks. I don't necessarily, I mean, I kind of understand the reason, you know, I kind of like some of the connectivity they have, but I would like to be able to, you know, play my game single player without having to worry about, am I going to lose a connection and get fucked?
Well, exactly. I mean, and that's what's such a pain. Or, I mean, what if you play on your laptop and, you know, what if you're, you know, traveling or just not in an online space? I mean, you can't even play your games at all then. I mean, I know that's probably a small amount of the people who actually play, but I don't know. It just seems like there's got to be a way around it. I mean, even Steam, you know, you can enable an offline mode where you can still play your games.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's a very weird fix to, you know, I don't know, just to try to get around piracy. It seems to hurt those who purchase the game more than, you know, those who are just gonna download a cracked version. So
yeah. Well, you know, I've never really had an issue with any type of DRM, because I honestly not the most computer savvy person in the world, so like I don't know what people say problems with DRM. I've never really had an issue with DRM. So like when people start complaining about it, I'm like, you guys must be doing something I'm not, because like I don't ever have an issue. But if this is something that's just affecting you, just random, like, you know, just playing without doing anything, then it definitely seems like it'd be an issue.
Right. Yeah. I never really have any issue with DRM either. I mean, on the CFD podcast yesterday, Rob was talking and he had an old copy of, or maybe it was Sage, maybe it wasn't Rob, but one of them had an old copy of a PC game that they wanted to play on Windows 7, but when they went to install it, it had a DRM that wasn't compatible with Windows 7, so they couldn't install and play the game at all. I mean, that's kind of crazy right there. So his workaround is he just downloaded a hacked version. I mean, he already owned the game. He owns, you know, he owns it, but he was forced to do that just because he, you know, the DRM software was out of date and wasn't compatible with Windows 7.
Right.
So he was unable to play it. You know, just things like that. And I know, you know, also some of the DRM, it only gives you, you know, a certain number of installs, which I've never had any problem with that. But, you know, someone who builds computers a lot or, you know, just, you know, I don't know. You never know. Even a computer if it's ruined, you know, and they want to install it again. And typically, I believe you can, like, call and they'll give you more more installs, right, basically. But, I mean, yeah, that's just such a hassle, really.
I don't know. I mean, I think that if you're, you know, if picking up a phone and, you know, talking to somebody for a few minutes is that big of a hassle, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I honestly, I don't think it is that huge of a hassle. I mean, I don't think the developer should, I mean, you know, like I said, I did work in, you know, I did work at Activision for like, you know, a year, and granted I was only a QA tester, so, you know, I'm not as invested in the industry as developers and other people, but, you know, I know how many hours I put into a game. You know, like I said, on Doom 3, like the last month of the game, we were working 7 days a week, 14 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was just a QA tester. I can't even imagine how many hours the developers were putting in.
Right.
Know? So, I respect their decision to try to put in anti-piracy software. I mean, they work hard on their games. They want to get paid for it. They deserve to get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and is it fair that it affects, you know, legitimate gamers in unforeseen ways? No, not exactly. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I think that, you know, companies have to try to protect their assets, and in doing so, you know, unforeseen problems arise from, you know, things. Obviously, this, you know, issue with Command & Conquer 4 does not seem like it should be that unforeseen.
Yeah, I mean, they did it, you know, on purpose. I mean, that was the plan, is, you know, if you're not online, well, then you can't play.
Well, I don't know if that was necessarily the purpose, you know. I mean, I don't think that, you know, honestly, I don't think EA would be, you know, assuming that if you're not online, you're doing something illegal and you shouldn't be playing our game.
Well, I don't think that's the assumption, but the assumption is, you know, that you can't play offline just because you can't be trusted that, you know, that your copy is legitimate. So they have to check it each time and throughout your play experience.
Well, okay, but I think maybe what possibly happened during the testing process is, you know, all this stuff gets tested. You know, like I said, I did, you know, I did localization, but there were people that did network testing. You know, I'm sure probably something that happened was the fact that they were, you know, testing on a closed network, so the network never went down, so they never encountered this issue
mm-hmm.
of people losing internet connection. You know, it's probably something at the time they didn't even think about. You know, and now that there's this problem there, I'm sure that, you know, there's somebody, I'm sure somebody there somewhere is working on an issue, on a way to get this fixed and still maintain the integrity of the DRM. What I kind of get turned off by is when I see people who are anti-DRM to the point of, you know, playing about it. Like I'm sorry, those people have a right to protect their assets.
Right.
Does it suck if it sometimes affects you in a negative way? Absolutely. But I'm not about to sit there and complain to somebody saying, oh, you shouldn't protect it because it's useless because you're going to get hacked anyway. You know what? Make people make them work to hack you.
Mm-hmm.
Make them work to, like, you know, to break this and get it cracked and get it out there for free. Don't just make it like just do whatever you want, because it's not fair to the people that sacrifice their personal life and their time and their effort and, you know, to get this product out to market. You know,
right.
Like that's my issue with when I see people like talking about, you know, anti-DRM policies and stuff like that. I'm just like, you don't understand. Like, how much time went into this game? You know,
right.
You just can't, you know. So that's my thing. I mean, and honestly, too, like, I think the fact that I'm more of a console gamer than a PC gamer may also askew my you know, my view a bit, because
you don't deal with it that often.
Yeah. Outside of World of Warcraft and, you know, Torchlight and a couple other games on Steam, I'm not buying a lot of PC games because, honestly, like, my PC can't play a lot of the high-end games.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my view might be skewed on that, but, you know, if you really don't like DRMs, stop playing games on your PC, buy a PS3 or a 360, you know, to go that way. Speaking of consoles, you still own a Wii, right?
Yes.
How excited are you for Mario Galaxy 2?
Oh, so excited.
Because I watched game trailers last Friday when they had like the big Wii episode where they're talking about Metroid Other M and Mario Galaxy. I watched that video, like I TiVo'd it. I've watched it like 4 times.
Really?
Yeah, I'm so excited to eventually to play Mario Galaxy 2. It looks fantastic.
I really can't wait. I'll have to watch that maybe when we're done recording. I'll watch that game trailers. I think I saw it there, but I just didn't get around to actually watching it.
Yeah, they talk a bit about like the I guess there's a drill bit you can get in the game where like on the different spherical worlds you like flick the Wiimote and like it spins the drill bit and you'll actually go inside or through the level.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like they're doing some really cool stuff. You know, and like Yoshi being in there and like different fruits give him different abilities and stuff like that. You know,
that's what I'm kind of excited about, that they're bringing Yoshi into it. That'll be kind of fun to play. And yeah, I do like that. Yeah, he eats different things to do, you know, different things, run really fast or get, I think there's one where he gets like bloated and kind of floats around or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that and Metroid Other M, Red Steel 2, like there's a lot of stuff coming out for Wii this year that makes me really regret having to get rid of mine. But you know, the situation I was in, I, you know, had to make that sacrifice because, you know, at the time when my PS3 died, I had, you know, I was just like, fuck, I've got 20 PS3 games and like 40 Blu-ray movies and I have no way to watch any of them or play any of them. So, you know, I had to make a sacrifice, but yeah. I'm definitely going to reacquire a Wii. The Xbox 360 is probably going to be a little bit further down the road, but like the fact that Mario Galaxy 2 is coming out in what, April, May, huh?
Which one?
Mario Galaxy 2 comes out in May.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah, like just right around the corner. Can't wait. But yeah, no, there's definitely some good things coming with the Wii, and. I know Brayman's not here, but he probably wouldn't have anything to say about this anyway. But you have any impressions on the PlayStation Move?
It looks interesting. I mean, we talked about this in the CFD podcast, I think the first one. And my stance is, you know, it looks interesting, but I'm going to need it to be packaged with a very good game to get me to buy it. You know, I don't want a high-res version of Wii Sports. You know, I'm not going to buy that. You know, I have Wii Sports and I have Wii Sports Resort. So I don't want another collection of mini games. I need something that's really interesting to get me to want to actually buy the game. Or, you like know, so to buy the controllers. Not even that. I mean, just because I've never really played a SOCOM game, and so I'm not that interested in that to begin with. I mean, if it works with that, that's cool for those people who play it, but that's not a game I was already going to buy, and the controller is not going to make me buy it. So I would just need it packaged with some kind of just interesting sort of intuitive game that really shows what that controller can do. But I'm excited about it. It looks cool, and I see it either have to be packaged with a very good game, or I'd have to know someone who buys the controllers. I'd have to try them and then see that, you know, it is worth dropping down the money to pick it up.
Right.
But I mean, it looks interesting, yeah. And I mean, from what I've read, it's more sensitive and accurate than the Wiimote, even with the Motion Plus, it seems. So, seems interesting.
I gotta say that the commercial they did with Kevin Butler talking about the Move was absolutely brilliant, and he makes like my biggest point that I've had about the Move and the Move versus Natal is the comedy makes about the controller having buttons, which is something that I thought was just like, you know, my when I first saw the Natal, like my initial reaction I had for the Natal was like, it would be great if Natal was able to be used in conjunction with a controller. You know, like my initial thought was like, you know, in a game like, you know, if I were to pick up another Halo, you know,
right,
if Natal could sense your head movement and change your scope of vision while you still controlled, you know, the game via the controller. You know, that'd be fantastic to have that kind of, you know, connectivity between the two input systems. And I think with Move actually having buttons on the controller, like there is that kind of connectivity where, you know, Just what I've read, what I understand is that the PlayStation, you know, eye camera will track your movements like through via your body, but then it will, you know, like the control of the moves you make with your hands using the like PlayStation Move will register in a different, you know, differently as well. So
mm-hmm.
it could track two different things. Then you have the buttons. So it just seems like there's so many more, you know, possibilities, and the fact that they suddenly stated that it's going to work with like a wide range of games, not just a collection of mini games that, you know, which, you know, Natal looks like it's, you know, going to be used for. Natal right. looks like it's being dumbed down to the point of being strictly a casual, family-friendly, you know, system.
Mm-hmm.
So, with the exception, I think Peter Molyneux might be the only person that's talking about using Natal in, like, a you know, top-tier game, which would be, like, Fable 3.
Right.
So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they fare against the Wii and, like, which system, you know, really kind of takes it to the next level and, you know, when are we going to see the end of this gaming cycle? Like, we're coming up on that time now where somebody should be talking about something if it was going to happen.
Yeah, but yeah, everyone seems to just be sort of, you know, coming out with new controllers or peripherals, so we haven't seen a move yet. I think the PS3 is obviously fine. They just rebooted, you know, with the Slim, so I wouldn't see, and they released last, so I wouldn't see them coming up with something before the others. But yeah, you'd have to think Nintendo or Microsoft would be sort of getting ready to want to announce something new. But then with Microsoft, you know, with the Natal and you know, the rumored Xbox Slim, you know, it's probably not going to happen anytime soon. So that kind of leaves Nintendo, and you know, they were quiet in GDC, so it'd be interesting to see if come E3 if they do announce some sort of new console. I mean, I know there's that interview with Reggie, and he said, you know, we're not looking to do Wii with HD graphics. He's like, when we announce a new system, it's going to be something big, just like the Wii was. You know, it's going to be something that changes how games are, you know, are played. So, you know, who knows? Maybe that happens at E3, and I'd say Nintendo's in the position to want to announce a new system. I mean, you know, like there was that analyst who said the PS3 should outsell the Wii, you know, within so many years, and Microsoft beat out the Wii this year or this month in sales, and so I wonder if they're gonna be thinking of something new anytime soon.
Nintendo is so different than the other two developers as far as like where they want to, you know, where they're taking their technology and their kind of, you know, group of consumers, that it's hard to see where they're going to take the Wii. I mean, I think John Davison has talked for the longest time that they're going to release a version of the Wii that, you know, that is, you know, HD capable, but
right,
you know, and you know, like you said, Reggie says, and that's not what we're really into.
Right,
it's going to be interesting to see. Like, this is definitely going to be interesting in E3, because I think last year, like going into E3, we all kind of knew that, you know, Natal and the PlayStation Cam Move was coming, you know.
Yeah, motion controllers were big, yeah.
You know, this year, you know, there's not a whole lot, you know, that we, you know, and like, you know, last year we all knew about the PSP Go, like, you know, prior to E3, and this year mm-hmm. we don't really know what's going to come out of it, you know. And like GDC this year, you know, like, I wonder what PlayStation has planned for E3, because it seems like the PlayStation Move having a date would have been something they would have pushed towards E3.
Right.
But because since they revealed it at GDC, does that mean they have something bigger to talk about?
Exactly.
You know? So, it's going to be interesting. But, you know, we'll see where that's going.